Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Spotlight on Youth. My name is Luke McQueen, and I'm hosting today's show, which is dedicated to social and legal trends impacting the rights of children across the country. Spotlight on Youth is a project of the Children's Law Center, Incorporated, a not-for-profit children's rights legal services organization. This radio show is being streamed live over the Internet and will be available for download after its conclusion. We encourage you to participate in the show by asking questions. To do so, dial 347-994-1149. That's 347-994-1149. And press the number 1 on your telephone keypad to indicate you have a question, and you will be put on the queue. Also, feel free to log into the chat room and pose questions there. Today's show focuses on the agreement between the Children's Law Center and Fayette County Public Schools to address disparities in discipline practices for youth of color and youth with disabilities. We are delighted to have with us today 4 key participants in the implementation of the agreement. Barbara Connor is the supervisor of the Superior Customer Service Community Relations Department support for Fayette County Public Schools. Her duties and responsibilities include being the Equity Council Liaison, District Superior Customer Service Coordinator, Civil Rights Compliance Officer, and the Superintendent's Designee for the agreement with the Children's Law Center. She has been employed by Fayette County Public Schools since 1982. Judy Boggs is Associate Director at Kentucky Center for Instructional Discipline, a statewide agency that supports schools with the training and implementation of positive behavioral interventions and supports. She has been a classroom teacher, principal, and director of elementary schools. Currently, she trains and provides technical supports with schools in the Kentucky Positive Behavior Interventions and Supports Network in the South Central area and coordinates statewide supports at the center's office in Frankfort. Stu Silverman has led 2 school districts to prominence in the state of Kentucky and has 3 times been named the State Superintendent of the Year. Most recently, he was among the 4 finalists for the National Superintendent of the Year Award. In 2004, Stu became the 5th superintendent within 3 years for the Fayette County Public Schools, one of the largest school districts in the state. Since Stu became superintendent, student achievement has skyrocketed, with nearly 40% of local schools surpassing state proficiency standards 6 years early. And we have our own today, Rebecca DiLoretto. She's an attorney with the Children's Law Center, and we're going to start the discussion off with a question to her. So, Rebecca, hi. It's good to have you.
Thanks, Luke. Nice to be here today.
So, to help those who are listening understand why the Children's Law Center has focused on the issue of school discipline and its connection to justice issues for children, can you share with us, in a broad sense, what the problems of the agreement between Fayette County Public Schools and the advocacy groups for children is intended to address?
Sure, Luke. The Children's Law Center has, a great concern for young people, recognizing that education is the way out of many of the challenges that those who come from low-income level or from minority groups may face, and that education is key. Thus, we looked at work that has been done for quite a long time in Fayette County with the Equity Council, wherein disparities had been identified by that council with the school system as relates to rates of discipline for youth of color and youth with disabilities. And we felt that there was a path that the superintendent could consider following to address those issues in a more effective manner. And we came to the superintendent with those issues, and he embraced the idea of addressing them head on by bringing in additional supports to the table that we'll talk about today.
Fabulous. And so, Stu, that leads to you. What told you to say yes to this agreement?
Well, I think, first of all, we have been grappling with the whole issue for the last several years, and we're trying to have an impact. The equity scorecard that Rebecca just mentioned was where we put out what those disparities are. And we had been trying to impact the disparities for several years, I believe with good intention, in cooperation with our Equity Council, our principals, and just were not making the kinds of progress that we felt that needed to be made. And ultimately, you know, we exist to raise student achievement for all kids. And if you look at our achievement gaps in our school districts, it's the same kids who are having the lower achievement, or the where the achievement gaps are actually occurring, as we are talking about with the disparities in the discipline piece of it. So it all kind of fit together. And when Rebecca came to us, again, we had just finished working with the Equity Council on the scorecard, and we were like, you know, we've been trying all these different things. What do we do? And so it was very timely for us to form a partnership with the Law Center, the Equity Council, and the Fayette County Public Schools to really address the issue head on.
Oh, that's great. You mentioned the equity scorecard that Barbara's office put together, and I just thought maybe, Barbara, you'd like to comment on some of the findings of the Equity Council.
Well, it would just be a repeat of what Stu says. The equity scorecard, it shows and it names the gaps between the different groups. It reports the gaps in suspensions, the gender gaps, the gaps in reading, the gaps in math.
Gotcha.
Are you interested in having Judy describe PBIS and explain its role in this agreement?
Absolutely. That would be my next topic. Judy, please, you would be the expert on the issue.
Oh, thank you, Luke. I'm happy to be here, and it's just such an honor to be working with Fayette County Schools in this initiative. The Center, Kentucky Center for Instructional Discipline, was started in 2004, and since that time, we have over 300 schools in Kentucky that have joined with us to implement positive behavior interventions and support. And that's pretty exciting. And in addition to that, there are over 14,000 schools across the nation that are implementing positive behavior interventions and support. And recently, we had a conference in June in Louisville at the Galt House, where we had over 400 participants from schools across the state. And we were able to recognize 143 of those schools for implementing PBIS with fidelity, and we sometimes shorten the positive behavior interventions and support by saying PBIS. So we're really excited to be working with Fayette County Schools and to start with a pilot project with them and work with their schools to support them in this implementation.
Now, what would you say about some critics of positive behavior interventions and supports who would say that kids at like the middle school, high school level are kind of lost causes?
Well, I hope that no educator would ever say that a student was a lost cause, and thank you for saying that, because some people do in the public may be saying something like that, but we're really excited about positive behavior interventions and support. We always have hope for every child that they can be successful. And that's what PBIS is all about, is working with students on social competence and academic achievement so that they can be successful, because they are our future leaders. And we want to do everything possible to give them a positive educational experience, which includes a positive culture and climate for their teachers as well as for them as students.
I think, Luke, the other thing I would add to that is that what I'm excited about with the PBIS program is that it's a preventative program, to where we're working with kids and families and teachers to prevent the behaviors from ever starting. We have to continue to have order and discipline in a classroom in order for teaching and learning to take place. So the ultimate goal is to prevent the behaviors from ever starting. When a misbehavior occurs, a teacher is put in a position that you have to do something at that point in time in order to be able to have teaching and learning to be able to continue. So ultimately, in an ideal world, we'd have none of those behaviors. So what the PBIS program would do would be to help us to minimize the behaviors from ever starting in the classroom. And when that happens, we'll impact this problem.
And part of what PBIS does, as I understand it, as a non-professional in education, is that it gives teachers more tools in order to engage students. And I know that there are other tools that Barbara and her staff and Vince, her supervisor, had been using in the school system, she might describe in terms of cultural competencies. But I would also say that what's important for our listeners to understand is that when the PBIS training takes place, it will cause teachers not just to think about that 10-day suspension, or not just to think that they should bring a charge of disorderly conduct in the court system, but instead that there are other ways to engage these youth before behavior gets out of hand. Is that fair to say, Judy?
It absolutely is. And as Mr. Silberman mentioned, the positive, proactive, and instructional is the key to that. So when we provide our training with school teams, we talk about those strategies that you mentioned that are effective, that there's a continuum of interventions rather than just one way to support students in their behavior. And we work with our schools to be so that they can define those behaviors so that there's consistency in the building. So teachers are defining all student infractions in the same way, and therefore they have a continuum of interventions they can implement to support that student with a more positive outcome.
And Judy, I like the word you use, continuum, because I understand that the way the thing it's replacing is a patchwork of kind of inconsistent behavior interventions. So how is it like a continuum? Like, where is the consistency that students can expect?
The continuum occurs from building to building because it's that dialogue among the professionals that work with the students where they have database decision making. They're looking at how many office discipline referrals do we have and what are those infractions, and then what are the interventions we can put in place to be proactive to prevent some of those behaviors from happening. And then always, as Rebecca mentioned, that we would not jump right to a suspension, that we have other kinds of interventions that we can implement and versus just jumping to a suspension. Because for some students, a suspension may be something that would be rewarding for them, unfortunately. And so we want to look at what can support that student for learning, and as well as a safe and orderly environment in the school.
I wondered, Barbara, would you mind sharing a little bit more about what you have done in the school system and what you're going to be continuing to do to address the cultural issues that exist with diversity in our schools?
Well, right now the Department of School Community and Government Support offers culturally responsive teaching and learning training to all staff. Our board has made it mandatory for all new teachers. And the first module is the self-reflection, and it talks about what we bring to the classroom as educators and how our prior socialization impacts how we teach. So we have three modules for culturally responsive teaching and learning. We also have the Superior Customer Service Initiative that we implemented last year. And one of the biggest components of the customer service initiative is that teachers make home visits. And they go out and they make these home visits prior to students attending school, the first start of school, to actually get to know a little about students so that they can begin those connections for meaningful and authentic relationships. So that's ongoing in the district. And so we have to realize that PBIS, culturally responsive teaching and learning, and superior customer service are all deliberate and intentional approaches to developing a positive culture.
I was wondering if I could get you to talk about, you mentioned the home visits. That's one of the programs that will be staying as a result of the agreement, right? There are a number of programs, right, that are just fine, and they're, you know, they've actually been working very well. I understand that you had some programs that have now been implemented statewide, right? Like is it the 2020 plan?
Well, the customer service initiative that we've been doing wasn't actually part of the agreement, but it really fits in great. I mean, it all of the pieces that Barbara talked about all address culture in our schools, and you know, that's the that's the key, is how people are looking at situations. And everybody looks at situations through their own lens. And one of the things that in the culturally responsive teaching and learning training that Barbara and Vince do in our school district is it gets people to really take a look at themselves and take a look at the overall situation, because everybody grew up differently, and those influences as you're growing up have an impact on how you behave every day. And that training really gets people to take a look at themselves and to look at the different cultures in that classroom. It's been very powerful for us. Our board, the reason our board has made it mandatory for all new teachers in the district is because it makes a difference. And when people can realize the, you know, that what their own experiences cause them to bring to the table, it really does change the culture in the school district. Our 2020 visioning process is something that we did locally, but even part of that, the culture piece was part of that whole deal. We worked with our community to bring folks together to talk about how to convert the Fayette County schools into a world-class school district where all kids were getting a world-class education. So again, all those pieces really fit together, and so that's the exciting piece about this whole partnership, is that ultimately when we change the culture, then the kids are the beneficiaries, and the academic achievement goes up for all kids.
Now, there are probably some parents from Fayette County listening. I was wondering if you could maybe give a picture of how this agreement is going to affect the schools that their students go to, and is it going to happen right away, or is it a more staggered process?
Well, we're actually starting with a pilot, and, you know, you had mentioned earlier, look, we're one of the largest school districts in the state. We're the second largest school district in the state. We have 38,000 students, and so when you're dealing with those numbers, we want to start fairly small. We're starting with 5 schools, which in a lot of districts, that's the total number of schools, but we want to start with a pilot of 5 to go in and with PBIS and make a difference, where our other schools are going to say, this is good stuff, and we're going to impact what's happening to our kids, to where ultimately we want schools to want to do this rather than us having to say, you know, you have to do it, which we would do if it comes down to it, but we really want to be able to say to folks that, take a look at this, take a look at the pilot, and this is something that's good for your kids, rather than having to mandate it. Like we have had to mandate the training for all new teachers, the reason for that is because it was a good thing. And our new teachers don't really know about it yet, but we haven't mandated culturally responsive teaching and learning in our schools, but the schools come forward to do that training. So when you start small and you do it right and it's successful, then others are going to want to come on board.
Well, I was wondering if I could pick everyone's brain on some criticisms I've heard about the agreement. I actually found these in an online story. They were comments in an online story below the and they were, well, one of them is I think maybe based on a misconception, because the person said this agreement is racist, that it's targeting certain students who are in different race groups for special treatment.
I think I can respond to that, Luke. I think that the data stands for itself. And when you look at if you go in and you look at the analysis of the discipline, of the achievement, and I mean, you can look at the data and see where the disparities exist. So ultimately what we're trying to do is to make sure that all kids are achieving at high levels. That's the bottom line goal on everything. If a student is suspended from school, they're not going to be learning at that time. At the same time, if they're committing offenses that are disrupting the educational process, we have to deal with that. With PBIS, the whole goal is to prevent that from happening to start with. And so the student then doesn't commit that behavior, stays in school, and then the learning takes place. So from my perspective, the reason that we're attacking the problem as it is that the numbers, I mean, pop out at you. Anybody can look at them and say, we have a problem with that. And again, we've been trying to work on it for the last 6 or 7 years, and with good intention, and haven't been able to impact it the way we want to.
Understood. Well, there were other criticisms in the story. I just wanted to go through these. Another one said, when did the public school mission change from educating students to raising children? Barbara, would you maybe want to address that one?
I think that our purpose, we are in the educational business. That's our business. But to educate the whole child, we have to educate them intellectually, and we have to educate them socially. And teaching them the expectations, the behavior expectations of schools, is our responsibility. Now, if people think that that's raising kids, that we take it as it is teaching them how to be successful in school socially.
So it's not like you're picking up the slack for inattentive parents. This is actually part of what education is for, right?
That's what education is for.
I think that the thing about, I mean, schools and what this agreement reflects is that our schools operate within a community, and they operate within a social structure that exists, which is, for example, why Barbara and Vince engaged in the cultural competency trainings, because we exist in a diverse, you know, culture where we need to respect one another's diversity. In the same way, we need to address what the realities of our communities are, and you can't run away from them. And the public school system in the United States is there to serve all the children, as Stu said. And if we don't engage at-risk youth at this level, where will we? When will we engage them? All of the studies indicate that the greatest predictor of whether a child, will end up in the criminal justice system has to do with that high school degree. And you can look, many will say, you could look at third graders and say, okay, we can figure out where your path will be in the future from third grade on. And I had a retired teacher tell me that at a community engagement in the past year, that she as a teacher felt those years were so critical, and they certainly are, but all those years are, middle school and high school too. So even if the problem is one of not having the supports in the family that we might have all wanted, even if that's the problem, it is only responsible for a school system to acknowledge those challenges that exist. And the Equity Council for Fayette County involves community members. This agreement, through this agreement, we enlarged the community's engagement on this issue. We brought in even more community members who had a stake in the success of all the children to be a part of making sure that we did implement PBIS with fidelity. We did review the code of conduct for Fayette County and make revisions to it where necessary to ensure that, we could overcome that disparity and we could be clear about consequences. So I think that those pieces are a part of this agreement, that bringing in the community and recognizing that a school system exists within a community. So we must address those things. We cannot simply sit back and say, well, it's the parents' fault, or it's the teacher's fault, or it's the court system's fault, or it's the child's fault. And that's really what Stu did as a leader, was to say, I am going to proactively step behind or beyond worrying about blame, and I am going to work towards a solution, which I think, it's the kind of proactive leadership you're going to have in place to try to solve the issue.
Luke, if I could add to that, just at a different level, at the school level, when we're talking about teaching expectations to students, and that's been mentioned several times throughout this conversation, we're talking about broad terms such as be safe, be respectful, and be responsible. And I'm not sure that there are any parents or any community members out there who would want to argue that they would want that for students in our schools today. And as they adopt their school-wide expectations, then teachers begin framing the rules for their classrooms based on those expectations. That's how it begins to filter to the classroom. So at every point during the PBIS process and during the training, schools, along with the families from their schools, are making decisions about what the expectations will be for the students in the schools. Now, we don't change what expectations are for families at home. We only talk about what are the expectations for students when they are at school. And we highly encourage parents to serve on those PBIS teams, attend the meetings, attend the trainings with their schools, and to actively participate in any survey they're given so that they can give their feedback about how it's working for their own children in the schools.
I see. So parents might get a bit more involved as a result.
Yes, we find that actually the strength of PBIS in schools does happen when parents are involved. We are noticing that families are asking their students or their children when they come home about acknowledgments that they've received at school and how did they follow the expectations. The conversation is changing. Instead of, did you get in trouble today, they're talking about how they followed the school-wide expectations. And that just makes a shift in the thinking, not only for our educators that are working with students, but also in families who are highly involved in their schools.
Now, Judy, there are undoubtedly some educators listening in, and I know that you and the Kentucky Center for Instructional Discipline are going to work real closely with Fayette County to train educators, set up these teams. What is the structure like for the educator training in this?
We always say that it's important for schools to start when they're ready and move at their own pace. This is something that we hope will be a systems change for them. So we need the staff buy-in. We absolutely need the administrator support. Strong leadership makes a big difference in the implementation of PBIS. A team is selected from a school to be the PBIS leadership team. They begin what we call the Tier 1 training. This is in line with Response to Intervention, or the RTI, that is research-based and that most schools in Kentucky are implementing right now to meet the needs of all students. So it's a three-tiered model. So we start by training at the Tier 1 level, where we talk about teaching school-wide expectations, an acknowledgement system, getting staff buy-in, ongoing evaluation and monitoring, and the complexity of the PBIS framework. But schools are allowed to make decisions about how they will do that while they are in training. And then we have monitoring tools that we allow them to use. We have some schools that have the different features of PBIS. We have some assessments that teams use that have the different features of PBIS, and they do some self-monitoring. Then we have anonymous surveys that we allow staff members to complete that will give some feedback to the team about how PBIS is being implemented. And then we also have outcome data tools where we're looking at student achievement and also office discipline referrals and numbers of suspensions by ethnicity and a variety of other kinds of areas and ways to look at their discipline data. So it's a complex process, but we are at the Kentucky Center for Instructional Discipline. We not only provide the training, but we provide the follow-up and technical support to be able to help the schools to meet their goals.
Gotcha.
Luke, when this first came out, our teachers talked with me about what does this mean for us? Does this mean that we're not going to have discipline in our classrooms, or you know, what are going to be the expectations of the teachers? And when they started to hear about the overall goals of the program of being a preventative type program to stop the behaviors from happening in the first place, they were right on board. And that's what this is all about. And I mean, it just, when you think about it, it really just makes sense.
And you know, if we would think about social deficits like we do academic deficits, when children enroll in school, and if they have academic deficits in reading and math, I mean, we will provide, you know, a variety of strategies, instructional tools. We need to do the same when children arrive at school and they have social deficits.
Now, I have a question that could go out to anybody, really. It goes kind of to the basis of PBIS. Why is it so important to focus on teaching these positive, you know, social behaviors? And just from the perspective of one person I talked to about this, I said, why should we reward children for doing things they're kind of already expected to do?
I'll be glad to start the conversation about that. Look, I wanted to mention that we rely on our training information from the National Center on Positive Behavior Interventions and Support, which is located at the University of Oregon. So it's our National PBIS Center. And we have co-directors there, Dr. Rob Horner and Dr. George Sugai. And they do the collection of research on the different strategies and practices that we talk about with our schools during the trainings. One of the controversial pieces that you just mentioned is the reward system. And as we start thinking about that piece, even though we know there's research behind it, in fact, since 1970, there have been over 100 studies that have proven that the research behind acknowledging students for doing what they're asked to do gets more of that same behavior. So why would we not do it, would be the question. So some people think of rewards as giving students something that they can hold in their hand, and that's not exactly what we're talking about. So rewards or acknowledgement takes on a different meaning when we talk about that during training. A school could implement rewards very badly and get the reverse effect of what they want. So it is important to be intentional about the acknowledgement system, to have it systematic and to have it school-wide so that it can be effective. Why would we not do something that would bring the kind of behavior that we want, that not only that our schools want, our teachers want, but that our community expects of our schools? So if that is one piece that will bring us to that point, then that is something that we should implement.
Thank you. I'd say well said.
I also, when you spoke a little bit earlier, Luke, you asked the question about rewarding students. I mean, as I understand PBIS, it has more to do with changing the behavior of the adults who engage the students. And I don't know if you all could share a little more about that as educators. Am I right about how I see that?
Now, PBIS is an ongoing professional development opportunity. So just attending training for 4 days for the PBIS team is not the end of what we do at Kentucky Center for Instructional Discipline. We not only provide that follow-up technical support, but we have additional training to work with students that have more challenging behaviors. About 80% of our children or students will respond to this Tier 1 training that we're talking about if it's implemented with fidelity. But then we also have students who need some specialized supports, and we provide a Tier 2 training that is called targeted problem solving or solution focused training. And then we also have about 3 to 5% of students in our schools that may not even respond to that. And so then we provide the training that we call wraparound or the tertiary training, where we talk about setting up systems for individual students with high at-risk behaviors. So that's back to the continuum that we talked about earlier in our conversation about PBIS.
Well, my next question is for Sue. I was wondering if you could give an explanation of how FCPS plans on kind of, you know, affording PBIS.
Well, actually, the there's really not a major cost for the implementation portion of it. We have to make decisions every year about what types of professional development we're going to be offering our teachers and our schools, and so that pretty much falls in line with what we would be doing anyway in terms of providing that professional development. And, you know, you look at what does the cost mean, and, you know, I try to break that down into how is it going to impact our kids in the classroom. And at least the way I'm looking at it is that if we are preventing behaviors from occurring and teaching, working with teachers on how to engage students to prevent those behaviors, then the whole teaching and learning process gets better. And that's what we're about. So that's an investment to me. But overall, when you really look at it, there's not a major cost for us, and not a financial cost for us to move it forward.
And insofar as we see this related to the idea of successful high school graduation, if you look at your likelihood of salary income earned in terms of those with and without a high school diploma in Kentucky overall, what you would see is that it is well worth the investment, because the high school diploma spells a very different future for a child than someone who drops out because they've given up, because they feel that they just can't succeed. And even if we have laws in place that say you must go until you're 18 years old, we still can be faced with quite a few young people who aren't going to end up with that diploma. We also, I know, Judy, when we've talked about this before, you've spoken of the fact that a lot of times children who don't succeed at school have come from families where the mom or dad may not have succeeded. And is that fair to say that we see this an intergenerational reality in Kentucky?
I think in general, as an educator for many years, I have noticed that it's important to have the inclusion of parents in any decision-making at the school level. And if they are afraid to come to school, if they do not feel it's a warm, friendly environment, then they're not likely to be as supportive of the school. And as an educator, we know that if we have the support of parents, we can go much further with our students in the educational environment. So that's why we highly encourage Family Resource Center directors, Youth Service Center directors, to be a part of the Youth Service or to be a part of the PBIS team, so that they can engage parents at that level to have an understanding of what a terrific impact it will have on all students to help them to be successful.
Now, Judy, I wanted to go back to something you said that I thought was really interesting. You said that you will be measuring the fidelity to which FAYET is applying PBIS. How does that work?
Yes, we during our training, Luke, what we do is we train our school teams on the different fidelity measures that are given to us through the National PBIS Center. So we have something called Benchmarks of Quality. That's one of the tools. And it has 53 elements on it, PBIS elements. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And schools do the self-assessment, and the teams will rate themselves on how they're implementing. But then we don't stop there. We do have the staff input where they complete a survey to say how well PBIS is being implemented at the school level. So we have a variety of measures that will be ongoing throughout the school year where we can target different groups that work with the school to find out how PBIS is being implemented. One thing that we have found from other organizations that go into schools to assess school climate, culture, or safety is that we have been notified by them that within 10 minutes when they walk into a PBIS school, they know that it's a PBIS school. The expectations are clear. There's a positive culture and climate among the adults in the building, as well as interactions with students and among students. So that's one thing that a school could be really proud of if an outside person comes in and recognizes immediately what a positive culture and climate there is. And that only results in higher student achievement and more social competence.
Great. And so there's improvement inside the school. I also understand that there are benefits that PBIS has on the outer community. Somebody like to talk about how it benefits the community?
I was just going to give one example of a high school that I worked with in Central Kentucky. And they decided to implement PBIS in their district. They were the only high school in their district. And they contacted the local newspaper, and the local newspaper had an article for them on implementing PBIS at their high school. They had tremendous buy-in from the entire community. They were contacted by businesses and organizations to say, how can we support you? We want this for our school. So they know that it makes a difference in the whole community and not just what happens at the school. So that's one small example of how communities become very involved in PBIS.
I'll add to that, too, and I think Rebecca hit on it a little bit earlier. When you start looking at the differences in the earnings of kids and actually just look at their overall futures, for kids who graduate from high school versus kids who don't, I mean, it's a huge impact on a community, from the culture of that community to the economic development of that community. So every single student who we can reach through a program like this will make a difference in the community.
Fabulous. So we have about 10 minutes left in the show, and I want to make sure that everybody thought we wrapped everything up. So the last two questions I have are, how can concerned parents in other school districts raise the issue and obtain PBIS? Is there anything they can do?
Well, I think that just having the conversations with their teachers and their administrators to share some of the successes of the program. It's not something that we would want to do if it didn't have a track record of success. And I think everybody who's entering into our partnership, our goals are exactly the same. We want all of our kids to succeed. So I would say to folks to take a look at the track record for PBIS and talk to teachers and administrators to say, what kind of an impact could this have on our school district? And I think when folks take a look at it, it really does make sense.
I also think that, one place people could go for supports would be the Kentucky Center for Instructional Discipline. Their own website has, information and links to other sources. In addition, the Kentucky Department of Education, there are experts there who can speak about it and offer comparisons of it with other types of intervention. But what PBIS brings is a holistic, systemic change, paradigm shift, really, is a way to look at it in how we address youth, such that we don't just see bringing the hammer down at the end of a long, very negative road of behavior as the right solution.
I was going to add one other thing, too, before I forget, because I want to make sure that we thank University of Kentucky. Mm-hmm. They've also joined in on the partnership, thanks to Rebecca and Children's Law Center brought them in to be able to do some of the research on the practices that we use, because this to us is a long-term program where we're going to be doing some things, and some things are going to work very well and some things may not. And so UK will be able to help us to monitor that and can also share with other districts and schools that these are the things that work for us. These are the things that didn't, and so we do appreciate UK's involvement in this also.
And that's the UK Department of Sociology, which, it is doing it as an outside entity with its concern about at-risk youth, and as Stu said, with its concern about long-term, in the future. And I think, as you indicated, Luke, these are very, deep problems that our society faces and children face, so that bringing to bear all the resources we can make a difference.
Right. Well, I think we covered just about everything that I came here to do. I hope any additional comments? Seeing looks like everybody's satisfied here. So I'd just like to wrap up by saying once again, you can download this. So thank you, everybody, for coming. I guess that's it. We're done.
Thank you.
Now, how will we know about those questions that people ask? Well, they didn't ask.